So the way I like to explain it to people is not to steal anybody else's marketing idea, but it really is kind of the easy button when it comes to communications. In today's world, especially in, you know, as we get it, move into AI and the IoT.
Budget overruns, brick devices, data breaches. Building connected products is hard. Welcome to Over the Air. Sharp, unfiltered conversations with executives about their IoT journeys, the mistakes they made, the lessons they learned, and what they wish they'd known when they started. I'm your host, Ryan Prosser. Welcome back to Over the Air, IoT Connected Devices and the Journey. My name is Ryan Prosser, CEO of Verri. And today we're joined by Stephen Griggs, Vice President of Sales Engineering at Ragent Corporation. Stephen, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Ryan. Appreciate it.
So we're going to be talking about, among a lot of other things today, some AI at the edge. But for those that don't know, tell us a little bit about Ragent.
So Ragent was founded out of the 9/11 stuff that happened to us in 2001. And from there, it just became this growing ecosystem. So the root of what Ragent does is they make a very complicated communication situations simple. We have a kind of a proprietary mesh protocol we call Kinetic Mesh. And from that, we have a way to truly have peer-to-peer, infrastructure-to-peer communications that literally just works right out of the box. You literally throw them out like breadcrumbs, which is what we sell, breadcrumbs. Throw them out there like breadcrumbs, they make a mesh, and you can go from there.
Okay, you covered a lot there and actually started to answer some of the questions I had for you today. But Kinetic Mesh, let's start with that. This is a term I don't think everybody is necessarily using in their day-to-day life. How do you guys think about Kinetic Mesh?
So the way I like to explain it to people is not to steal anybody else's marketing idea, but it really is kind of the easy button when it comes to communications. In today's world, especially in, you know, as we get it, move into AI and the IoT, everything needs to talk to everything else. And the way that a lot of communications architectures go, there's a point to multipoint kind of thing where you have, like, for instance, your phone that talks to a hotspot. Well, that hotspot can feed a number of phones. But in order for your phone to talk to another phone, you have to go through a tower and on a whole network of other things. Whereas with Kinetic Mesh, you can literally talk from one phone directly to the other if that works. So nowadays, we're getting into drone swarms and things like that, where the drones need to understand where they are in relation to everybody else or to each other. And that peer-to-peer communication makes things very, very simple because you don't have to go through one central point. And it's redundant. So there's packets get to where they're going. Kinetic Mesh is an automated routing protocol so that packets get from their source to their destination over a multitude of different paths and the redundant paths. So you can mostly guarantee packet delivery to where, you know, getting your data where it needs to go. And it's just easy. When Ragent Kinetic Mesh makes that entire complicated sounding ordeal very easy, actually.
So I want to get to this idea of breadcrumbs in a second. I'm really impressed with the idea that you guys, like, you can turn something on and they will immediately begin to interconnect. But talk to us a little bit about Cowbell. So you guys have, I think, a bit of a sense of humor when it comes to branding over there, it seems. But talk to the folks about Cowbell and how that lives within the Kinetic Mesh ecosystem.
So again, in this world of AI and IoT, what you find is there's a lot of data that needs to move from a device that's actually doing work to the device that tells it to do work. And so that requires packets moving through the air, over Ethernet, over fiber, through switches, over this complicated network. With Cowbell, and that's our CEO's sense of humor because everybody needs more Cowbell. So with Cowbell, this is actually a machine learning device in a box. It's our edge computing AI device that also encompasses Kinetic Mesh or utilizes Kinetic Mesh. So now you've got a device, and it's actually the only one on the market that it's an AI device, an AI enabling device that has, it's not only the hardware, but it's also the networking piece, the communications piece. It also has all of the docking and everything you need to just bring in your AI applications. You don't need to bring in additional MQTT servers or anything else. We have that all embedded. So it's literally, again, a complicated thing that we're making simple. by bringing this device to market. And it's kind of the centralized that you can build an entire organization around as far as, you know, your distributed AI platforms and things.
So for folks at home that, you know, are following along, and basically what you're describing is like what I describe as a super ruggedized gateway. Is that a fair description of what we're...
That is dead on the money. I guess I probably could have said that.
Well, then I wouldn't have a job, so you'd be here by yourself. But so now transition us to this idea of breadcrumbs.
The whole idea came about from, you know, 9/11, when our founders, Bob Skena and Paul Helhake, met with the National Guard powers that be that were trying to deal with Ground Zero. When those towers went down, all of the communication in the southern part of Manhattan all went down. They didn't have anything. And so what they said was, if we had just had some communications devices that we could just throw out like breadcrumbs, and ding, it stuck. So if you ever go to our website and have a look at some of the marketing material up there, what you'll see are nodes scattered throughout kind of a, think about an above ground mine, for instance. You see all these nodes that are spread around, and they're all connected to each other multiple times. So you have trucks that are connected to 200 other devices. You have one piece of infrastructure can simultaneously see and communicate with a couple of hundred devices at one time. But it's literally, you throw stuff out there like breadcrumbs, and they all just find each other. They automatically figure out which route is best to get your packets from point A to point B. It really is just that simple. It's very, very comprehensive. It's very configurable. So when it comes to the complexity of your network, we can get as sick and twisted as you want to when it comes to security, VLANs, things like that. But at the end of the day, if you want just a quick ad hoc network, you can just throw our stuff out there and it just works.
So just to like bring this back to a very practical example that folks could follow along with, video analytics. Take us down, like, for instance, here is how we operate.
So for instance, you have a cowbell. This cowbell is capable of running any type of video analytics software that you may have. For instance, just at a trade show that we just attended in Las Vegas at CES, what we did was we created, because, I mean, you build this nice, cool box. It's really cool for people to look at, but it's just a box unless you're actually doing something with it. So our AI team actually developed a couple of applications, one of which is a video analytics application, because we have some really ruggedized devices that are operating in some industrial spaces that require sometimes people to be wearing certain safety gear, hard hats, glasses, steel-toed boots, safety vests, things like that. So one of the things that we did was we created this video analytics program that would allow a camera to be running over the cowbell, and the cowbell is doing all the analytics right there on the edge. So it can look at a frame and it can look at a person and knows what a vest looks like. So it can tell whether you're wearing one or not, hard hat, whether you're wearing one or not, or if there's a programmed amount of, or certain, what we call PPE, personal protective equipment, things that you're supposed to be wearing, it can automatically tell whether you're wearing everything or you're not. And if you're not, it can paint you in a red square, and it can throw an alert back to some dispatch or some central location. All of that is happening on the edge. So the only thing that needs to transverse the network, if you think about it, is just a warning. So everything else happens right on the edge instead of having to stream that video, and it goes all the way back and all that computational stuff is done. And then that may be fine for one instance. But if you think about these large industrial operations, we're multiplying that 10s and 20s and 30s. So all of a sudden that becomes a whole lot of data that has to stream over the air. Whereas if we're doing it right on the edge, now we're streaming very little data back. We're only streaming the alerts and things like that. We're not streaming the entire 20 times of your video cameras and all of the analytics that have to take place on the server farm back at headquarters or whatever.
I need a button on my desk I can press anytime guests say over the air that plays some kind of special sound like Jim Cramer has on Mad Money. So what you guys are known for, and I want to poke at, is it's very difficult to make products that complicated simple and that work well, that, like, quote unquote, just work, which is really all that anybody wants. You just like, man, I just want this to work, you know? And it's kind of a mark of intelligence when, certainly I vary, when we're hiring people, we screen for, can they take complicated things and make them simple? And there's an ocean of engineers that love to take simple things and make them complicated. There's no shortage of that. But going the other way, that's a huge filter. Talk to me about, like, I guess this is a wrong side of impossible question, but if it also feels cultural for Raygen, like, what does it look like on you guys' side to be driving product development with what seems to be a required outcome? So I don't know. I don't even know exactly what the question is there. How do you do that? That's the question. For folks out there that are at these like companies that over-engineer things and they overcomplicate things, what does that look like from you guys' perspective to ensure that doesn't happen with a product that could so easily become like massively overcomplicated?
Yeah, and we see that in our competition a bit, or others see that in our competition. But to get to your question, our CTO and co-founder, Paul Hellhake, he has developed this wonderful development team. And we've been doing this for a lot of years now. We talk about Kinetic Mesh. Kinetic Mesh is the product of over 20 years of engineering. It's been developed, if we go all the way back to 11B days, very, very young in the Wi-Fi era. So Kinetic Mesh, this is the culmination of over 20 years of engineering. And the team, I was actually the first sales engineer. Well, back then I was an applications engineer, but I was the first engineer that was hired for Raygen that wasn't a developmental engineer. I wasn't developing something. I was put in between sales and engineering. And my job was to take this very ostensibly complicated stuff and develop it into something that's easy to use. And that comes from a lot of teamwork. That comes from a lot of meetings and a lot of input from the market. So that's us, my team, the sales engineers out in the field talking about what the market needs, the market demands, and then conveying that in a way to our development team so that they can take that and say, well, we can tweak the protocol, or we can make improvements this way, or we can create this. And does that fit? So there's a whole ecosystem of between development and the sales engineers and sales to really turn that into a product that just normal people would be able to use, that people that are not network engineers, they would be able to set up and get working on their sites to do what needs to be done.
There's a generation of young engineers that I would say born after 92 or so, and they hear you saying 9/11 as this moment that kind of gave birth to Raygen and so forth. And like some percentage of them weren't even alive when that event took place. But that certainly, if they're born after 92, it was not like a landmark event like it was for you and I. And I say that because my question is, 9/11 happened a long time ago for those of us of a certain age, but it was be 23 years this coming September. How does a company stay relevant and innovative when you're that far removed from the thing that gave birth to the idea and the company in the first place?
First of all, our CEO, Bob Scana, he is a true visionary. That's what a CEO's got to be. He's got to have a new vision. We've got to be flexible. We have to be nimble when it comes to market demands. We found ourselves into markets that we never thought we would be in. We were developed for military, and that turned into something that the first responders really wanted. And oh, by the way, it works in mining. We go do a proof of concept to help out the Kennecott Bingham Canyon mine in Salt Lake City, Utah, and boom, all of a sudden we're in a mine. And now we can rinse and repeat. We're in over 300 mines now all over the globe. And then ports, they got stuff that moves, because that's the thing. Kinetic Mesh is built for mobility. So all these trucks moving around, you've got cranes and stuff moving around in ports, you've got trains. We're in several transportation organizations, so you're doing metro and light rail and stuff like that. Same kind of stuff. We're doing video on the move. We're doing video, voice, and data. So it's one of those things, because Kinetic Mesh is such a versatile protocol, and the demands for technology is only getting stronger and getting more complicated. They want stuff to be more mobile. They want having a central infrastructure, and having that device only be able to talk on that central infrastructure now is becoming outdated. Everything needs to be able to move around. Everything has to be able to automatically adjust and things like that. And that's what Raygen brings to the table.
We're running out of time. I got two last questions for you if you have a minute. One, what's next? What are you guys excited about? What's the future hold?
Well, actually, we literally just launched Cowbell. That was at CES in Las Vegas. We literally just launched Cowbell. And so right now, Cowbell is kind of the focus of where Raygen is headed right now. So we're leaning into the edge computing and the AI world. We've taken that Cowbell and we've actually turned it into kind of a smaller device a smaller AI device that we're kind of calling the Flying Cow. So this device is actually, think about a device that you could put on a drone, and that drone can now provide analytics. So video analytics on a drone, video analytics on the end of a robot arm, that kind of thing. So that's something that we're currently doing right now, and we're really leaning into the IoT world.
You and me both, brother. So I have a question about CES. This is unexpected, but what in the world is the future of CES?
It's huge.
Huge is not huge enough. So for folks at home, if you've never been to CES, it is somewhere between 10 and 1,000 times bigger than you're imagining. But it is so big that it boggles the mind and is beginning to overwhelm Las Vegas. So it really kind of like dominates Las Vegas, which is no easy feat. I mean, these guys just hosted the Super Bowl and F1 earlier in the year. So my question for you, not expecting you to be a CES expert here, but it was the Consumer Electronics Show at a time when consumer electronics was vertical among many. But now, what isn't a consumer electronic? What is the consumer product that people own that isn't electronic? So it's like effectively the conference for everything. You know, at some point, does this thing splinter and become?
I know.
What do you think?
We're due to go back to Las Vegas, and I think it's September where they have the Mine Expo show. And when I went to CES, I'm seeing some of the same displays, like the giant Caterpillar haul trucks and John Deere and Komatsu, the big loaders and stuff like that, things you would see at a mining show or a construction show. So because a lot of those vehicles are now automated, like they don't need drivers anymore. They can have these 400-ton haul trucks run around with no driver and just know where it's supposed to go and do what it's supposed to do because they're using Ragent. So when it comes to CES, this is my first year going. So I was completely blown away. Like I'm used to going to the conference center, you know, like the big Las Vegas conference center for Mine Expo and a couple of the other shows. But we were actually in the Venetian. Like we were in one of the ballrooms at the Venetian. So, you know, you had to get on a bus to go to the big show. It's absolutely enormous. And there's really not, I mean, if it's electronic and you can't find it at CES, you're not looking hard enough because the whole Intel display was amazing. I don't want to drop a bunch of names here, but a lot of these, you know, they put a lot of time and money into their booths and their displays. And some of the technology, like you can walk in a room the size of your bedroom and play a virtual reality game that will just blow your mind that they have on display there at CES. It's so cool.
One of our core thesis at Very is that by 2030, IoT, everything will be a T on the I. You know, like it would be very unusual for something to not be connected, especially as processing costs come down. Like what we're seeing with cellular now, like the cost, it's like crazy. You're seeing costs come down. You're seeing the level of complexity come down. And it's making kind of our worldview a little bit unwieldy because if we do IoT and everything's IoT, does that mean we do everything? And I see in CES a show that I don't think can possibly sustain this. Like at some point, it feels like it's going to splinter. But folks at home, you heard it here first. We're calling on February, very, very end of February 2024. CES is going to splinter in the next 3 years. I don't know how it's going to happen or what it's going to look like.
You know, I was actually at a barbecue place in Las Vegas for dinner, and it was right near the Pawn Stars place. And I guess one of the guys that is on Pawn Stars owns the barbecue place. And we happened to just wander in and sit at the bar, and he was sitting at the end of the bar. And he was talking about, you know, that Las Vegas, the natives there, have CES jokes now. It's been going on for so long. Now they tell jokes about the people that attend CES. So it's a thing.
And I'll just clarify, when I say I think it's going to splinter, I don't think the company that throws CES is going to lose control. I just think they're going to say, listen, we got to start to like subdivide this into some areas to make this more manageable for folks. But okay, so I'm going to call you out. You said you weren't going to name drop. Now I'm going to make you name drop. Play us out with a couple of folks. You've been in the game for a minute. Who out there in IoT land is doing good work? Not enough people are talking about. It's my favorite question. I love to ask everybody. Give us a name or two, some people that you're a fan of.
Okay. Well, first of all, not to be too self-serving, but we just acquired a company called Rheos. Rheos specializes in IoT. That's exactly what they do. They started out doing lighting and smart lighting. So they started out with lighting because everybody needs lights, but then they put these gateways, these IoT gateways in their lights that allow them to be remotely controlled. And then they've got these nice little gateways that you can turn it into a building management system. They integrate directly into any building management system from access control. They can control your temperature. They can control the brightness of your lighting. You can optimize it to do so many things. And by the way, it also meshes and it also develops your Wi-Fi network as well. So this whole system is such a wonderful, comprehensive, and simple system to deploy in your building and in the carpeted spaces. And now we're actually moving it into the larger industrial spaces, the airport tunnels and stuff like that, so that nobody's in the tunnel. Things don't have to work. You can turn off lights. You can turn off the moving sidewalks and stuff like that. As soon as people are detected, they can turn all that stuff back on. The savings, the energy savings, pay for the systems in a very, very small amount of time. For the amount of investment that you put in there, you can pay for it in less than a year, less than a fiscal year.
I got two comments. One, I don't know the experience in the women's restroom, but on behalf of all the guys in the men's restroom, the people that make the lights go off after a period of motionlessness in the men's restroom, some of us are going sit down bathroom here. And like, there is nothing worse than being in a public restroom and having the lights time out on you. It is the worst experience. Please tell me you guys are all over that. That's all I need to know for today. Are you all over that problem?
We can be for sure. We can be for
okay.
sure.
All right, comment number two. You got to give us a company that isn't one you acquired. Give us one more.
Our AI guys are working with a couple of companies, OpenCV and DroneCode. DroneCode is a US-based nonprofit under the Linux Foundation, and they're providing a lot of open source governance infrastructure and services to software and hardware projects. So we're doing a lot of the stuff that we're writing and doing. We're kind of going through that Linux Foundation. They're doing some really good work. For those that are starting out or trying to start developing AI code, these guys are, they're somebody that you really want to be involved with.
Awesome. Well, we might hit you up for an introduction. We're always looking for new guests on the show. By the way, if you're out there in TV land, we're always looking for guests on the show. You can visit verytechnology.com to submit a name. But Stephen, thank you so much for being on the show here today.
Thank you very much for having me. And it's been a great conversation.
I really enjoyed it too. All right, guys, join us next time as we meet with another executive and talk about things that went wrong on a journey that went right. Over the Air is presented by Verry, your trusted source for cutting-edge technology solutions. For the latest updates and exclusive content, be sure to follow Over the Air on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else great podcasts are found. On behalf of the team here at Verry, thanks for listening.